listening to Your Practice Made Perfect, support, protection, and advice for practicing medical professionals. Brought to you by SVMIC.
Hey everyone, welcome to Your Practice Made Perfect. I'm Megan Clark and I'll be your host today. In this episode, we're going to revisit something that we've discussed before, a topic most of you are likely pretty familiar with, telemedicine. It was a thing before the pandemic. It became even more of a thing during the pandemic, of course, due to necessity. And now that we're somewhat back to normal, or maybe I should rephrase that, back to our new normal, the question is, where does telemedicine stand now? So today we're going to talk about this specific topic as it relates to prescribing, as it relates to Medicare challenges we are seeing, and then some tips to make virtual visits work more for you. Joining me, we have SVMIC's very own Michael Cash from our Medical Practice Services Department. Welcome, Michael. Glad to have you today.
Hi, Megan. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Always good to see you. So before we get started, let's just take a few minutes to talk about you. Can you share with our listeners just a bit about yourself before we dive in?
Yeah, sure. Be glad to. My name is Michael Cash. I work in the Medical Practice Services Department. I'm one of the medical practice consultants. Before I joined SVMIC, I worked for a physician-owned multi-specialty group. And then I moved over to the hospital setting, and I was the director of outpatient clinics. I joined SVMIC in 2016, and one of my first assignments was telemedicine due to the interest from policyholders. In the beginning of telemedicine, we had the infrastructure in place, but many payers didn't cover it. And then we had the pandemic, and then most of the payers started covering telemedicine. So that's what we're going to talk about today.
Awesome. Well, I know that you are an expert on this topic and you've worked and researched it quite a bit. So super excited to have you. Let's go ahead and kick this off. So let's start back with the pandemic. I feel like the pandemic really made telemedicine sort of a hot topic, especially for patients. Many patients may not have been as familiar with the whole virtual visit telemedicine topic, but now it's pretty much common knowledge that telemedicine exists, at least for the majority of us. So I feel like because it is such a familiar topic, and because the pandemic launched us into this fast-paced understanding of what telemedicine is, it may be good to step back a few years and talk about the formal ending of the public health emergency. So since the federal public health emergency formally ended on May 11th, 2023, have we seen any changes since then or because of that to telemedicine?
We had a lot of changes at the beginning of the pandemic with increased flexibilities of telemedicine. And I know there's been a lot of confusion with the ending of the public health emergency on May 11th, 2023. Fortunately, not much has changed since the end of the public health emergency. Congress passed the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2023, which extends many of the Medicare payment flexibilities until December 2024. In other words, Medicare patients can continue to use telemedicine at home, and audio-only services are covered through December 2024. We also recently received the 2024 Medicare Final Rule. It was released on November the 2nd, 2023, and we're excited to see that Medicare will continue to pay telemedicine services at the non-facility rate. Before the rule, there was some discussion about paying telemedicine at the facility rate in 2024, which would reduce payments by about $20 per visit. I think many providers would have limited telemedicine access if payments were paid at the facility rate. Also, the 2024 final rule allows direct supervision of advanced practitioners using telemedicine through the end of 2024. CMS will also continue its current policy of allowing providers to list their work address on their Medicare enrollment form while billing telehealth services from their home until the end of 2024 as well. The one thing that changed at the end of the public health emergency is that providers must use secure encrypted platforms for telemedicine effective August the 10th. They gave a 90-day flexibility window. In other words, FaceTime and Skype are no longer accepted. The HIPAA enforcement discretion for non-secure applications has been removed. That was something that was implemented at the beginning of the public health emergency, but ended at the end of the public health emergency.
Okay, so Facebook and Skype are no longer accepted means. Is there a place that providers could look or a resource that maybe you could suggest where they could find secure platforms that they are able to use?
Sure. I think many providers now are utilizing EHRs, and my first recommendation is to approach your EHR to see if they are working with a telemedicine vendor. Many of these have integration already built into the EHR, so it makes it easier to schedule appointments and to handle some of the billing.
Okay, that's a great first step. So that's all positive news, it sounds like, and pretty good insight into Medicare regulations. Now, what about commercial payers? Are there any trends there that you could give us some insight into?
Yes, many of the commercial payers have implemented permanent virtual policies, but I think it is important to check with each payer's guidelines as there are some differences in modifier and place of service codes for billing. So I think that would be the important thing to check with the commercial payers.
Okay, great. Now, prescribing. This is, I know, more of a complicated topic. I believe during the public health emergency, the DEA and the Drug Enforcement Agency removed the in-person requirement for prescribing controlled substances. Is that still a thing or has that changed?
Yes, that's a great question. Let's kind of separate it into two components. I think one, we have the controlled substances is one issue. I think prescribing non-controlled substances is the same as it's always been.
Okay.
But the concern is really around controlled substances. And the DEA implemented a temporary rule allowing the prescription of controlled medications to be permitted through December 31st, 2024 for any provider-patient relationships that were established during this same time period. In other words, these patients do not require an in-person visit for now. Before the pandemic, we had the Ryan Hyatt Act. It's a federal law that required providers to have at least one in-person visit before prescribing controlled substances. And that's currently waived through the end of 2024.
Okay. At the end of 2024, do you think that this is just going to be a year-by-year thing?
At this point, I think it is a year-by-year thing. Before some new guidance was recently released, they came out with some guidance that permitted controlled substances through the end of 2023, and we just recently had additional guidance that extended that through 2024. And so we really don't know until the end of 2024 what will happen unless we get additional clarification.
Right. Okay. And I know SCMIC will stay on top of that, of course. And as new things come in, we will be sure to keep our policyholders updated and informed. So in the last 3 years, there's been a lot of changes, at least it feels that way. What are some of the challenges that you might be seeing physicians or providers facing when it comes to telemedicine specifically?
I get a lot of the calls relating to telemedicine questions, and I think the biggest thing that I get is related to state licensing requirements. And I think most providers understand that you have to have a license in the state where the patient is located at the time of service. Most of the questions I get, and what's not so clear, is what to do when existing patients or established patients travel out of state on vacation, for example. Some states provide more clarification than others. For example, Alabama permits out-of-state physicians who are not licensed in Alabama, but licensed in another state, to less than 10 visits per year. This is great for patients that, you know, go on vacation, let's say Gulf Shores, for example, and then they get sick, they need something, so they call their physician. Arkansas has some language that permits out-of-state physicians for episodic consultations, but they don't really define the number on that. Tennessee does not have any guidance for out-of-state physicians treating the occasional patient who travels to this region. The safest approach is to encourage patients to seek an in-state provider if they need care when traveling out of state. Another option is to research individual state laws to see if any flexibility exists for out-of-state physicians. Unfortunately, we cannot recommend a general solution as there's a potential for us to violate state laws. Hopefully, as we get more guidance on telemedicine and some of the state laws, we'll have more clarification on this in the future. But it's probably one of the more challenging questions I get related to telemedicine. We also get some questions regarding pharmacies filling prescriptions from out of state. Let's say I have a patient that, you know, I'm a provider in Tennessee, I treat a patient in Tennessee, but they live in Kentucky, and I have to send an order to a pharmacy in Kentucky. Some pharmacies have internal policies that prohibit filling prescriptions for out-of-state providers, and that's just kind of a case-by-case basis depending on the pharmacy.
Okay, so as we move forward, what are your thoughts on telemedicine as time goes on and we look to the future?
Sure. Medicare hasn't implemented any permanent changes. So what is true today may not be in place at the end of 2024. They've extended many of the flexibilities through the end of 2024, but they are still assessing the cost and benefits of telemedicine. On one hand, there's the benefits of patient access. Some say there's lower cost, but on the other hand, there's concern for overutilization or increased costs. Let's say a patient has a telemedicine visit, they bill for it, the patient's not happy, and so then they go to the office and they duplicate the service or the cost. So there's some concern on that, and Medicare is evaluating that. The OIG and HHS are also investigating high-risk providers for abuse, so we'll have to kind of see where that goes. I think, though, ultimately, patients are comfortable utilizing telemedicine, and it's going to be difficult to restrict it moving forward. But I think we'll have to look for the 2025 Medicare proposed or final rule for additional guidance.
Agreed. It's definitely becoming common practice as far as, at least from more of the patient's perspective, I would say. Okay, so let's jump back just a touch. We have been 3 years since the start of the public health emergency when many of the telemedicine restrictions were lifted. I'm sure physicians have a lot of thoughts about this, a lot of feelings about this, and I know that you personally get phone calls on this particular topic quite a bit. What's some of the feedback that you've heard?
I've heard a lot of reviews from established physician residents, older physicians, and I think it's all mixed with some positives and negatives, regardless of the age demographic. Some of the positives that I hear that it helps with patient convenience and access. It can be an alternative when patients call to cancel an in-person visit. They can give another option, say maybe they can't make it to the office. And so the office says, well, would you like to schedule a telemedicine visit so that it can help there? It helps reduce some of the resources required to check in and room patients. You don't have the physical presence of the patient on hand. On the other hand, though, some patients have trouble utilizing technology. Patients may have limited bandwidth disrupting the visit, or they may take the telemedicine visit in a venue that's not conducive to like an efficient conversation. Let's say they're, you know, driving down the road or they're in a public place. Ultimately, I mean, telemedicine's not appropriate for everyone. And there will be some resistance from a segment of the population. One of the complaints I heard in the past was, well, all my patients are elderly and they won't use it. Well, the argument that I have for that is that, you know, the same could be true for electronic banking or using apps on our phone to schedule things. There's a segment of the population that doesn't use those tools, but there's also a segment that does, and that can help create some efficiencies within the office. I ultimately see telemedicine as a tool that can help with the patient experience. It's very similar to utilizing the patient portal. We're seeing more interest in patient self-scheduling tools and electronic demographic check-in tools. This helps patients be more proactive in their healthcare decisions, and it can also help with office efficiencies. I think we're going to see more demand for patient tools like these to communicate with their physicians like we have in these other resources. I think it's a part of patient consumerism, and patients will have a larger role in their healthcare decisions.
Right, definitely. I do agree. Michael, I think that those are some really good things for physicians to think about as far as positives, and of course there's negatives with everything, but I feel like you gave us a really good list of things that we can use to make telemedicine feel maybe a little less overwhelming and make it feel like more of a tool. So let's say I am a physician. I have used telemedicine in the past, or possibly I haven't, but I'm interested in incorporating it into my practice. What are some ways that I can make telemedicine work for me? In other words, how should I use telemedicine in my practice to help me with things like time management, patient care, scheduling? I know you kind of touched on a few of those things in that previous answer, but can we revisit that? Can you expand on that at all?
Sure. I'd say everyone has individual preferences, and this includes physicians. So I think physicians need to find what works for them and their patient flow. What works for one physician may be a little bit different than the other. If I were trying to think of telemedicine and as a tool for me to help make my practice more efficient, I think I would recommend using it for block scheduling throughout the day. Physicians may opt to schedule an hour or two just for telemedicine same-day visits. And I think this could help with office efficiencies for those patients that do not need to come into the office. It can reduce crowding in your waiting room and exam rooms and allow staff more flexibility to handle other office-related needs. And I think patients also appreciate the option to have a telemedicine service if needed.
Right. I do think at least having that option is definitely attractive to the patient population. So you mentioned, Michael, block scheduling, which would be, you know, maybe blocking out from 10 to 12 on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I do telemedicine visits or whatever the case may be. What about just maybe blocking an entire day, one day a week? On Wednesday, I strictly see telemedicine patients. Is that realistic for a physician, or what would be a realistic block scheduling style when it comes to telemedicine?
You know, every group is going to have different needs. It just depends on the size of the group and if the physicians share patients, that can have an impact as well. You know, if you're in a group of five or more physicians and you're sharing patients, maybe you have an option for one physician a day to have strictly telemedicine appointments only. And it's just for those same day easy call-ins that it may not necessarily be your normal patient, but you can help fill those acute needs through the telemedicine platform.
Right. And I'd imagine too, with kind of adopting the use of telemedicine and maybe using it creatively to work for your group, you would need to obviously get staff on board, maybe those who are scheduling appointments. You know, if somebody calls in for a certain appointment, move them to telemedicine. So obviously, I'd imagine there has to be some organization, likely some education on the front side before you just dive in.
Yes, anytime it's change, anytime change, it requires a lot of education and communication. I think instructing the scheduling staff how to help patients utilize the platform to know what conditions telemedicine may be the best fit, how to schedule those across the physicians, providers. There would need to be some training in advance of that.
This is just some more curiosity on my part, but would you say a group adopting telemedicine, maybe they don't use it regularly right now, and they're considering implementing telemedicine within the group, do all providers need to be on board, or have you seen groups where maybe some providers are open to utilizing telemedicine and others are not?
I think so. I've heard in some practices, some physicians are more comfortable utilizing than others. And again, I think you're going to have to go back to evaluating the unique dynamics of each group. In some groups, all physicians may use it. In other groups, they may have some that use it and others that don't. I don't think that is a need to implement it or not implement it, but it's just one of the variables you have to consider when putting that in place.
Right, right. So you definitely covered some great points to making telemedicine work for you, as opposed to making it feel like an addition or an added stress to your day, making it help with your efficiency and your patient care. And you did cover the use of, you know, kind of customizing your telemedicine based on your appointment needs. So rather than a new patient visit using telemedicine, possibly use telemedicine for all your follow-ups. But I do want to throw it out there as well for our listeners. We do have resources on telemedicine within our Vantage portal, and we do also have an online course that covers virtual visits and telemedicine. So I think our listeners, as you get interested in implementing telemedicine, or even if you're currently using it or planning to implement it, that would be something to look into and a good place to start. And now before we wrap up, this has been great, very informative, educational. I know I've learned something. Any last minute tips or advice that you'd like to leave us with?
Sure. I think I alluded to this earlier in the conversation, but I would just ultimately say that telemedicine is just one of the tools that can assist with workflow. And I think we'll see more automation tools in the office that gives patients more control in their healthcare decisions. I think many practices struggle with limited resources and staffing right now. And utilizing some of these tools, I mentioned self-scheduling, patient portals, EHR messaging, electronic demographic tools can help with these automated efficiencies. And I think telemedicine is just one of the tools that can assist practices with some of these needs.
Thank you so much, Michael, for being here. Listeners, before we close out, I will say that we will link a few things in the show notes, our online course, a few resources that apply to this particular topic. So be sure to check those out. And Michael, thank you so much again. This was great.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, with that, we will say goodbye. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Your Practice Made Perfect. Listen to more episodes, subscribe to the podcast, and find show notes at svmic.com/podcast. The contents of this podcast are intended for informational purposes only and do not constitute legal advice. policyholders are urged to consult with their personal attorney for legal advice, as specific legal requirements may vary from state to state and change over time.